This week at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck, the song's the thing. Soprano Martha Guth will perform a wide range of songs under the heading Lost Souls in partnership with several musicians familiar to concertgoers at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck. When I spoke to Martha Guth, she told me this was her first time appearing at the festival.
It sure is, although I have spent a little bit of time on Michigan's West Coast, I guess you should call it. I've sung with the West Michigan Symphony and the Holland Symphony before, and I've done a bit of performing at Calvin College as well.
Are you from Vancouver, British Columbia, or am I just imagining that?
No, you're not imagining it. You know, my grandparents grew up in Ann Arbor and lived there all of their life, but my father got a job in Vancouver when I was just 5 years old. And so our whole family moved out to the West Coast, and I did all of my elementary and high school there.
Were you discovering singing at that point? Did you have the opportunity to sing and also hear other singers while living there?
I did, yeah. There is some phenomenal music making going on there. I was very lucky to be introduced to music, I would say through music theater, and I did a lot of sort of semi-professional performances all the way through high school. And then, but it was really a voice teacher and a choral director who pulled me aside, both of them at different times, and said, you know, you really should be thinking about classical music instead of music theater, because your voice, there's something in it that we think would be more appropriate for that. So I started in my senior year of high school. I started really delving into that repertoire, and then I applied to conservatories and came back to the United States. I was very lucky to have teachers and mentors there who could see something else for me, mm-hmm. and I've loved it ever since.
I don't think that's an easy assessment to make. It has to be a very experienced listener and teacher to kind of pick up on voice types and how to help move along a young performer.
I think so. Yeah, we were extremely lucky in Vancouver. There was a teacher there named Bruce Pullen who led a children's choir. And I was part of that all the way through. They have a youth choir as well. And I was really part of that all the way through all of my schooling up until the end of high school. And he, in particular, I think had an incredible ear, not just for children's voices, but he also taught at the university level. He was a classical musician himself, of course. And so he would, I think, look out for those kinds of sounds that he thought would be most appropriate.
So in the classical field, are you taking roles in opera or fashioning more of a soloist recital kind of career?
It is really, I think, a sort of soloist recital career for me. And it's interesting because I think most classical singers end up in opera simply because there is more of a living to be made there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know why that is quite, but that it is the case that most people, most teachers in college will tell you it is almost impossible to make a career as a solo vocalist if you are not doing a lot of opera. And perhaps that has to do with the size of audiences for chamber music. It's usually small, and so smaller. Because it's necessarily, you know, you want it to be intimate. And so somehow that doesn't change, go into big fees or something like that. But I think that it is, I feel extremely lucky. I feel extremely privileged to be able to have this kind of career. And I think it actually really, really works if you're thinking about the sort of ins and outs of every day. You know, I'm able to go and perform on a weekend and come home and have my weeks at home with my family and work there and teach and do other things like that. Mm-hmm. And I can really make a really great balance as far as being a classical musician. It feels great.
Where do you call home now? And by the way, where did you study in the United States?
So I live in Ann Arbor right now. And previously I was in New York for a long time. But my husband and I had a child. He's 7 years old now. And my parents now live back in Ann Arbor. And so we needed help. That was sort of the impulse that brought us back. But before I went to school, when I was in school, I went to the Oberlin Conservatory of Music. And then I went to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. And then I went to University of Michigan for my doctorate. And also I was in Germany as well for a couple of years at school. So I've been through a lot of schooling.
Oberlin has a strong early music program. It seems like I remember something about that. Were you also trained in any earlier styles?
Yeah, no, they have a fabulous program, especially in the summer. It is something that I have definitely looked into. In fact, I've done a couple of recordings with forte piano. It's not quite early music, but it's sort of transitioning, getting earlier, I guess. And I've done a lot of Baroque opera. When I do opera, it tends to be earlier, like up to Mozart, Handel, Mozart, and then contemporary, because I think that calls for maybe a little bit more of a pure sound, which people seem to like in my voice too. And so I was trained in that, but I will say that typically what I end up being hired for is a lot of recital, chamber music, orchestral concerts, so soloist with an orchestra, doing a lot of oratorio repertoire, in which case you have to have a really wide range. So that would be anything from Handel to present day.
To Ode to Joy and all of that.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That's quite a lot to prepare. But you get to do it, you know, one concert at a time. You mentioned a Schubert album, and I'm lucky enough to have a subscription to the Naxos Music Library. And so when I entered your name, it came up, and I had a chance to enjoy some of the tracks with the forte piano accompaniment. I wanted to say something about your voice. I mean, I am really not somebody who could just go out there and sit and assess people's voices like we were talking about earlier. But there's a quality to me that I hear in your voice where you have so much in reserve. There seems to be a huge voice there that you're using in a very intelligent way in the Schubert. I think your instrument is a pretty powerful one. Am I right?
Well, I think that's been a big journey for me. That's really kind of astute that you picked that up. Thank you for saying that. I think there are a couple things that go into it. The forte piano is a smaller instrument just in general than what we're used to performing with, which would be something, I mean, it could be upwards of a 9-foot Steinway, which can really pump out a lot of sound, and of course an orchestra. So, you know, yeah, it is, but it also has really, really interesting colors. And I think one does adjust color and size to the instrument so that you're not overpowering, so that you really become one, I guess, with whomever you're playing with. And so that's the first thing that I would say. The other thing I would say is that, in fact, personally for me, because I've always been drawn to art song, and art song typically is sort of thought of as a kind of a salon or parlor kind of concert performance thing, that the stereotype is that one does pull back a lot for art song performances. And I have learned personally for me that when I am giving a performance, that that's not what I want to do, that I do want to use my whole voice. Or at least I want to be able to be free to use my whole voice if it calls on it. And there are songs in this program that we're going to be doing at the end of this week that do call for the entire voice to be used, which is exciting. And it's what I really like is to be able to create all of that contrast and all of those dynamic shifts and just be free to do that.
Well, now I'd like to talk about how this program was decided upon. It has many, many selections, and I'm kind of pleased that you are interacting not with the usual pianist, but a number of other instruments as well.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the story of how this came about?
Absolutely. So, well, it came about very simply, and that is just that Jenny Walford and Andrew Lee have been friends, and I've worked with them because I've worked at the West Michigan Symphony, and of course I knew them because they are both players there. And if I look at my music program, which I jumped at because it is, even though I do get to do a lot of concert work, it is kind of rare to be able to pull together an entire program for yourself that where you can have other instruments at your fingertips, because often it's just piano and voice. And so that was exciting to me. When I am thinking about creating a program, I often will start with one piece of music that I just really love or that I'm kind of, you know, fangirling over. And so like this, it has to be this piece. And then I think, well, how can I build a program around this? And then usually I go to the text. And so I'll look at the poetry because that's really the thing that sets apart, you know, chamber music and vocal chamber music. So then I try and find themes or stories that intersect with that one piece of music. And then it grows organically from there. And so this program, although it seems kind of disparate, there are pieces, there's French, there's English, there's German, and it really spans a few centuries in composers and poets. I loosely kind of put them together as lost souls. And so I thought, and I thought, well, how do I do that? So what I did is I sort of looked at it literally by 19th century romantic standards. And so in there are stories like Ophelia and Mignon. These are sort of dramatic, tragic stories. And then I found that in the 20th and the 21st century, that the poetry shifts and this idea of a lost soul changes. It's not quite so literal. It becomes more about people who feel trapped, somehow broken. Mm-hmm. Anyways, there's a lot of variations in there.
It does sound like we're in for sort of a tragic night.
Yeah, well, I'm also someone, maybe it's obvious by the program, but I'm also someone who just loves to wallow in music that I love. And so I guess I'm inviting the audience to do the same with me. But yes, there's some tragedy. But it's also incredibly beautiful music. And so hopefully it's something that you do want to just kind of wallow in as well.
What was the piece you had to sing?
That is actually a piece called Ophelia Song by Earl Kim. And it's not very well known. And it's mostly a cappella, actually. There's some piano right in the end of it, and it's the very first piece that I sing. And it is by an American composer who took the words of Rimbaud, French poet, and then translated them into English. And it's, to my ear, one of the most remarkable settings of contemporary song within the context of a sort of 19th century aesthetic. Mm. So it's very lyrical, it's very beautiful, but you could not mistake it for, you know, Schumann or anything else like that.
And
it grabs you.
It sets the tone for the entire evening.
Absolutely.
What are some pieces on the program where other instruments are involved?
So there are some really interesting, lots of interesting pieces. So there's a string quartet without piano by an American composer named Libby Larson, another favorite composer of mine, called This Unbearable Stillness. There are pieces that are just a voice and violin, voice and cello. And then the biggest force is a piece by Ernest Chanson called his Chanson Perpetuelle, or Eternal Song, by a French composer. And that's soprano and piano quintet. And so we have all of our forces together there, and that closes the program right before the intermission.
What do you hope the audience will feel or go away with after this program?
I hope that everybody is, you know, satisfied and has enjoyed themselves and it's been entertaining for them. One of the things that I feel very strongly about with art music, with art song, is that it can enact some kind of profound shift in the listener. It certainly has for me. And what I mean by that is that that you listen, you begin, as you go on the journey of a concert, you begin to listen differently as you go along. You begin to pick things up. And the thing that happens with this union of poetry and music, I think, can be very profound. And so if you are willing to sort of wallow and keep your ears open for the entire journey of it, I think it can be changing. And I mean, or at the least, a kind of way to sort of relieve stress and let the day, whatever stresses that are following you around, to let that go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just live in the moment.
Well, may I finish with a question that I don't think I've asked a singer before, that has to do, it's a sort of lifting the curtains sort of question, but one of my favorite things about watching a song recital and listening, of course, is how the singer comes to embody the soul of the song through interpretation of text and things like that, but also with an almost a choreographed set of gestures that kind of hold her emotion in check or let it out. I was wondering if there is training in that. I mean, do you just naturally move as you feel like it, or are some of these things thought out, and would you perform the same gestures every time you sang the specific song?
Well, that's kind of interesting that you bring that up. I think that, gesture historically has been very stylized. And so perhaps when these songs, you know, if a Schubert song was premiered, perhaps there would have been gesture that would have been kind of expected. And yes, when watching a recital, there is a kind of, I don't know if one could say like a code that most people expect in looking at a performer on stage. However, I would say, and your listeners can judge whether it's true or not if they decide to come, but I would say that those lines are kind of being broken down now. I think it is much more possible to not have gesture that might seem a little bit stilted to a 21st century audience. I think that it sometimes is actually better to be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more free. And I think that, you know, that a choreographed gesture doesn't mean so much unless it really comes from a very deep emotional place. And so where there might be some kind of movement that is that comes from an emotional impulse, I don't choreograph anything. I don't sit down and think about those things before I go on stage. If it happens, it happens. If not, I try and just be as natural and as authentic as I can when I'm performing.
Well, thanks for your thoughts on that and for your thoughts on the program as well. I'm going to let you go now and enjoy rehearsing this program before the concerts on Thursday and Friday. Martha, I hope we get a chance to talk again in the future. It was really enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you so much.